What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that always looks at people like they've just volleyed our cat. Coming up, have Borough got enough goals? Russell Martin, is he all that? And some Duff information. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And welcome along to our weekly Football League chat. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I've got Sam Parkin with me as ever. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm very good. Yeah, made it back in one piece from Stevenage, despite being on a very wobbly gantry. Don't know if Simon's been up there, but
yeah,
they got the yeah. Sorry, I've a spoiler of a guest today, but yeah, we were wobbling all over the shop. They got a drum underneath, so you feel like you're basically in with the Stevenage Ultras, and it was quite feisty last night, as we'll get onto.
Okay, we'll hear more about that. I did a game from Stevenage once for Leicester's under-21s and I had to stand in the stand that's opposite where the gantry is on my own next to that drum. It was a very strange experience. So as Simon has teased there, there's no Clarkie, he's at the cricket. So we've got an EFL expert and track radio presenter, Simon Watts, friend of the show, with us. Simon, I'll put you on the spot then. Is Stevenage the wobbliest gantry you've ever been on?
No, Colchester's old Layer Road ground wins that award, I think, just. But of those stadiums still here, then, yeah, it probably is right up there, to be fair. Did my first commentary at Stevenage, actually.
Wow. I would say Dagenham and Redbridge, the scariest for me. The scaffold you have to climb to get up to that is absolutely brutal. If you don't like heights, do not go there. All right, we've got lots to get to today. First of all, though, let me remind you, if you'd like to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, it's the best way for us to grow the show and we would appreciate it. And our partners, Quinbet, have an offer for you. You can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your loss as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Right, we are going to start today with some midweek musings. And Sam was on hand for the League Cup tie between Crystal Palace and Middlesbrough on Tuesday. Sam, you are concerned about the Borough output, if I have interpreted your slightly coarser message during the week correctly. And that was borne out by the stats. They had 16 shots versus 8 for Crystal Palace. They had nearly 60% of the ball, but they didn't score. Kim Hellberg said they took a massive step forward in the game. What an odd remark.
Well, the massive caveat, and I'm not concerned, is that obviously, and Simon wrote his chat well, Will Lancashire didn't appear until late in the piece on Tuesday. So he is the missing piece of the jigsaw. Him and the goalkeeper, actually, Vitek, who didn't play in the week. It was Solbrin back in goal. But I think, yeah, getting those two ends of the pitch, fundamentally perfect, I think, for the second tier this season. We'll see them really strong in the Championship and challenging. But yeah, it was a frustrating night, I think, for anyone of a Middlesbrough persuasion, because loads of good football. And, you know, any neutral that watched the game, you look at the possession stats, you look at the patterns of play, it's all very, very easy on the eye. But Strelitz, unfortunately, is no substitute for Lancashire, and he was very peripheral. The standout player was probably Cozy Adubri, who gave Ben Chilwell quite a tricky evening. Had a couple of opportunities where he cut in and let fly. But yeah, their second string, you know, wasn't, you know, able to stay with Crystal Palace. And it's just in those moments, despite not having the ball, and we know Palace are pretty comfortable in giving over the lion's share of possession and being quite deep, albeit it's slightly different under the new manager there. They don't get deterred by that. And when the opportunities arise, they are so clinical. And I think so often that is the difference between Championship and in the Premier League. And, you know, not a team that's going to be challenging in the upper echelons of the Premier League in Crystal Palace, but still the quality gap is pretty vast. So that was the difference. Strand Larsen with a couple of brilliant goals. Kamada with a sumptuous little chip to cap a comfortable evening for Palace. I would suggest that we're probably not going to see Luke Ayling and Alfie Jones too often at the heart of Middlesbrough's defence, because they were brushed aside for the two centre-forwards goals. And I think Melander and Phillips have been pretty good. Borges played left of the back three at QPR last time out. So I think they're pretty well stocked there. But yeah, I think it was probably recognised by Palace's centre forward, that he could get joy aerially, especially against Luke Ayling, which is how it played out. Further forward, yeah, mentioned Koji Adubri. Two fullbacks, really good, getting involved. Byram and Callum Britton underlapping. Nice patterns, as I've alluded to, but just a lot of probing on the edge of the box without that. That cutting edge, which I'm sure Lancashire will supply when he's back in at the weekend. So, yeah, I wouldn't completely agree with the manager, but, you know, we very much rate him, me and Clarkey, when we talk Middlesbrough. Certainly going to be challenging for automatic promotion in the Championship.
Mm. And that was their fifth away game in the last six and third of the week, back to back at the Riverside now against Norwich and Millwall. Simon, for those who don't know, you are an Oxford aficionado, so you've seen plenty of Will Lancashire last season. He scored more than half of Borough's goals so far this term. Are you backing him to carry the burden for them throughout the season?
Yeah, I said this last season, even before those Middlesbrough goals, like I genuinely feel he's 21 now. I genuinely feel that he will be an England player, barring injuries. I genuinely do. And I'm still quite staggered that Spurs allowed him to go out permanently. I think Middlesbrough have got a fantastic centre forward there. You know, when you look at those 11, it wasn't just the 11 goals he scored, you know, in a struggling Oxford team last season, where literally he could go four or five Championship games without really having an opportunity through no fault of his own. But, you know, his endeavour, what he does off the ball, his pressing, and he's a, you know, I don't want to stereotype him as an old school centre forward, but I saw him come up against centre halves last season who were far more experienced, bigger, stronger centre halves on paper, that, you know, he went toe to toe, bullied them just as much as they did him. And, you know, he's a player who's backed up now. Now he's in a team at Championship level creating chances for him, backed up that, you know, I think he'll get 20 goals this season quite comfortably. And I would have said that before. You know, he's got his, what, 6-7 on the mark already. And you know, barring injury, I think, you know, he's definitely going to be the talisman for them this season. A fantastic player, but just a great guy, great attitude as well. And you know, even some of the videos he posted through I don't think he did a pre-season. I think he literally just trained all summer, looking at his social media, which, you know, maybe that's not a good thing, but, you know, he's obsessed with getting better. And that's one thing Matt Bloomfield talked about when he was at Oxford. You literally had to drag him off the training pitch. He just wanted to be out there all the time, getting better and bettering himself.
Interesting. He hasn't played 90 since the second game of the season. We'll see if he does that at the weekend. There was a league action as well midweek. Simon was presiding over the game between Watford and Preston at Vicarage Road. A come-from-behind win for Watford. I mean, the manager called it a big win, Alessio Dionisi. They're always big wins when you're Watford manager and you haven't won for a couple, right? Because he would have been under pressure. Were they worth it?
It was a big let-off. They were awful. They were absolutely awful for 70 minutes. But in fairness to Alessio Dionisi, he made some changes in the second half that really did help to turn the game around. And, you know, I think both of these teams are probably going to really just wait for that international break before you really see a true reflection of them. You know, Watford's squad build has been, you know, largely around a lot of young players and a lot of players who, bar Steffi Mavadidi, haven't played in England before. And, you know, he's referencing not really being able to put out his strongest team Saturday, Tuesday, which he's going to get used to because that is English football. And, you know, that showed because he rested players. You know, their recruitment in the summer left them with a massive, massive void in defence, really. You know, as good as the signings are, there's not really a balance there at the minute. And, you know, supporters aren't particularly happy with that. But I look at their squad and some of those recruits, you know, Federico Revalia, their goalkeeper, he's 6'5" and a real kind of, you know, vocal character, played in Serie A for Bologna, played in Europa League last season. Ica Bravo, who came off the bench, one of those who I think they're managing his minutes at the minute. Once upon a time, Bayer Leverkusen's youngest player, beat Florian Wirtz record on the books of Barcelona, Real Madrid. He provided the assist with a delightful cross for the winner. And I think, you know, these are players who, you know, have a high ceiling, and there's every reason for Watford fans to get excited. But I just think that this recruitment, and when you look through Amin Nabizadeh, 19, came through the academy, a couple of good goals already. Otman Mama, Mamadou Doumbia, he scored the winner. Rocco Vatta, still all 19, 20, 21. Kind of at odds with the hire them, fire them managerial policy they've got, because, you know, they've got these young players they're developing, but obviously they need to be given time, and managers aren't given time at Watford. But one thing I noted in the pre-match news conference as well, their captain Matty Pollock, this is a line I heard from him. He said, "It's refreshing knowing that we're not going to throw in the towel every week." And I think that's quite telling, maybe from this squad compared to the squad that Watford finished the season with last year, where they were pretty bad.
Ica Bravo, commentator's dream or too obvious?
Yeah, didn't I pick up on that one actually? But yeah, he was, I mean, it was, as soon as he gets the ball at his feet, he's got something about him. Yeah, he is absolute class. And, you know, as you would have loved it to have been on the end of that cross, I'm sure, on Tuesday night for Dumbia's winner, because, you know, it was absolutely, you know, I think I said at the time, right on the money, and it really was. You know, he looks a great, great player. I just think they need a bit of experience. They've been linked with Connor Cody and Jamal Lascelles. And I think even though that goes against that young policy, you know, that's exactly what they need. You know, at the other end of the pitch, they always had Troy Deeney, didn't they? And I just think that sort of British experience, championship player could really give them, you know, what they need to kind of, you know, complement what they got with Matty Pollock at the minute.
All right, Bravo Watford, not so good for Preston. We thought maybe that Paul Heckingbottom had taken some of the pressure off his shoulders by beating Blackburn, but 3 points is their joint lowest tally after six games since 1930, and the captain Ali McCann's going to be out for months after hamstring surgery. They got Lincoln on Saturday at Deepdale. All feels a bit relegation-y there, though. In League One, Sam took in some Thursday night action. Is it a rivalry when Stevenage play host to Luton? Maybe a bit of a one-sided one. But it was a spicy affair, Sam. And Jack Wilshere didn't see the whole game from the dugout.
No, well, I didn't see much of the game from the gantry either. If you guys have been up there, because there is certainly two corners, which is badly obscured. And we were told unceremoniously by many a staff member at Stevenage, you've got to be up on that gantry by 7:15 because the ladder comes up. And that meant that there was no team sheets either. So it was a little bit of a scramble. But it was, yeah, a really, really well competed game, loads of aggression early part. Obviously, the Stevenage fans, as you alluded to, Matt, really look forward to this fixture. And there is that air about the Luton supporters, naturally, that they should be winning against Stevenage because of where the two teams have been historically. And Stevenage is a relatively new club in relative terms in comparison to the many and other in the EFL. And that is just the way it is. So the Stevenage fans were really up for it. They were beaten last year there 2-0, and that was the final game for Matt Bloomfield. Someone told us last night as well that Mick Harford's final game was in the National League against Stevenage. So it's been a bad omen for Luton Town managers. I'm not suggesting that Jack Wilshere is under any kind of pressure at the moment, but it's been a difficult game because of some of those ingredients that I've already mentioned. And yet we were thrown straight into it in terms of being the commentator, because there was three or four really contentious decisions in the first half. I think I probably called one incorrectly with hindsight. I'll get onto that in a minute. The opening goal is Dan Kemp, who has a really important role for Stevenage because they are still, you know, very, very robust. The intensity is very evident every time you watch Stevenage. They're powerful. They have a long throw. They'll hurt you from set pieces. Yes, all those things are true, but Dan Kemp is a lovely footballer, and he probably has to go through periods where he doesn't have much of the ball. So when he does, and when he can find little bits of space, he really has to affect it because he is, you know, their most talented offensive player. And he got a really good goal, but the contentious moment was Daniel Phillips holding on to Liam Walsh, and the referee waved play on. And you can argue all day as to whether it was a foul, but I think the reality is that 9 times out of 10, the referee just blows up there to give himself an easy life more than anything else. Nobody would have complained. There may have been a couple of moans from the Stevenage supporters, but it would have been forgotten a minute later. So I think he puts himself in a really difficult position when Dan Kemp strides on and obviously lashes it into the Luton net. So I thought that was a foul. The one I probably didn't call brilliantly was another ball over the top. Josh Keeley misjudged it. Dan Kemp's in for a tap-in, and there's a collision with a doff in the Luton centre-half. And I think that one, with hindsight and having seen it back, is probably a red card for a doffin and a free kick. I think it was outside the box, if memory serves. So that one went for Luton, 1-0 behind, and the killer second goal is offside. Really bad decision from the linesman. I don't think he's obscured on the gantry. He's got a fine view looking across, and he's missed Josh McGuinness get into a into an offside position to turn the ball home from Brogio, one of the substitutes. Alonie from Aston Villa did really well down the left-hand side. And again, Josh Keighley probably could have done better with both the goals, and ricochets in off McGuinness for the crucial second. So not a great night for the officials, but I wouldn't want to take anything away from Stevenage. They were the better side. I thought the two central midfield players, Louis Thompson and Dan Phillips, dominated really in that area, got better in the second half. Tommy Setford, the young loanee in goal on loan from Arsenal, wasn't really tested by Luton. And Luton too passive in their possession. Two sideways, not enough penetration. Really surprised to see Callum Marshall go off. Scored two wonderful goals already this season. And I thought that it was the time to pair him with Naki Wells and really force the issue. And I understood the reaction from the Luton supporters, who were really disappointed at his substitution. But, you know, they weren't terrible. They probed, but they need to show a little bit more cutting edge and a little bit more room when they're going towards the opposition's goal. So he will get a bit of criticism in light of losing against a rival and a team, again, that I expect Luton to finish above this season. But I think Alex Revelle deserves enormous credit for not only this result, but what he did last season. And potentially with maybe a stronger squad, not being able to emulate that, I think that would be an incredible season for them. But I think if he could get them in the top half again, we need to start, you know, talking up Alex Revelle as a manager that could move on and get a job at a higher level with better resources.
Yeah, they're fourth as we record. They've scored seven in two games. We have the definitive answer, at least from Stevenage's admin, about whether this is a rivalry. They posted not a derby, but that's a fantastic local 3 points, which I very much enjoy. Good stuff, admin.
Double Nando's as well in Stevenage.
Yeah.
I didn't have two, but I was in one, and the commentator, unknown to me, was in the other. I mean, what a gaffe.
I think we've done this before, but let's do it again. Would you have half chicken hot with rice and coleslaw?
I'm always in some kind of bread. So I'm in a wrap or a burger or a pita. I went for a wrap last night, and I took away, which was a rick, but I wasn't particularly hungry at the time. I just knew that we didn't get fed at Stevenage, so I took away and I had rice and broccoli on said gantry when cold.
Yeah, you always. Risking a sweaty chicken if you do that. Simon, you a Nando's fan?
Not really, I must admit, no. But I do love a Stevenage trip because there's a, if it's still there anyway, it's been a couple of years, there's a pub within walking distance and they bring out roast potatoes to your table. Just roasties. I mean, that gets a massive thumbs up from me.
On match day, yeah?
On match day, yeah.
When you're not in a working capacity, is this like an Oxford away day?
It is, yeah.
Yeah,
like either or, really, I suppose, because you probably go there before a game as well, as long as you obviously don't have a pint.
Well, any time of day is a good time for roast potatoes. On that, we can all agree. On that note, let's take a little pause, come back and look ahead at some of the weekend's games. Swansea and Burnley throw hands and boots in South Wales on Saturday. Swans aiming to bounce back after suffering a first league defeat of the season at Southampton in the week, whilst the Clarets desperately seeking some positivity and, more importantly, some points. On Swansea, Simon, they're not going to be too bothered about losing at Southampton. I mean, that can happen, can't it? And it was always going to happen because Vitor Matas was named as manager of the month for August earlier in the week, and we know what that means.
Yeah, absolutely. But they've been looking good defensively already. Four clean sheets in the championship this season. Probably the big question mark is at the other end of whether they got the goals in the team. I know that Vapotnik got his first of the season, didn't he? Albeit a penalty against Southampton, but hasn't hit the strides that saw him finish as he was the championship top scorer, wasn't he, last season as well? But I think they got something, you know, Gonzalo Franco is back from injury this weekend. He brings a lot of energy, really good carrier of the ball in midfield, which is going to be big for them. I've liked the look of Joseph Opoku that they've signed in the summer, still only 20 years of age. And I'm still intrigued to see how Jeremy Monger fits into the side. Hasn't played too much since joining on loan from Manchester City, but they signed him for a lot of money. And obviously was one of the rare highlights for Leicester last season as well. So I think it's a team in a period of evolution. And I think they'll probably, although I thought Burnley's performance against Wrexham was much improved in midweek, they'll probably see this as a Burnley team arriving in Swansea at a good time to play them.
Yeah, second bottom, the Claret. Still haven't won, but as Simon says, they did get a point at the race course midweek. Jamie Vardy, Sam, you've once been a veteran striker. I don't know. I'm not so sure that this one's going to work out for some reason. I mean, he hasn't played for ages. He's maybe more concerned with his YouTube channel than getting Burnley up the table. Can he still do it at, what, 39 years of age in a team that's struggling for goals? Are they going to be able to supply him with enough chances?
Well, I watched the documentary, which I would recommend. Did you watch it? I think it was called At Home with the Vardys or something. So I am...
Can't think of much worse than watching a documentary on the Vardy family, if I'm honest. But
it's worth it for the view out of the house on whatever lake they were living in Italy. So I'm quite au fait with his performances in Serie A, at least, because I've seen all the highs and lows from that season over there. It doesn't feel like he's lost his speed, which I would think, maybe I'm just a bit Michael Owen bias here, but I would feel that's one of the first things to go. But, you know, maybe he's going to be very fortunate and he's still going to be able to have that explosive sprinting that he's always had. So, yeah, whether he's going to be able to play regularly, I doubt. But, you know, off the bench, the odd start in a game that may suit his qualities, probably away from home when he doesn't have to get too heavily involved in the build-up or impressing the opposition, but can play on that last line. And he's kind of out of the Haaland mould, isn't he, where he doesn't have to be heavily involved, doesn't have to have too many touches, continues to make little darts, and he'll know, you know, the ninth run or 10th run or whatever he makes, he'll get that opportunity to get in on goal. So I think he'll have a part to play. It's an interesting little bit of recruitment for, yeah, I think probably an ownership that's under a little bit of pressure. Of course, the manager will become that as well if they don't start to win some games. But I think you have to trust that, you know, patience is needed. Few signings coming in just before the window. Obviously a little bit rocked by Sapayev's injury because he's been incredible by all accounts. I watched a kind of 10-minute montage of him from the previous home game and he was absolutely electric. So that's going to be a little bit of a blow for them. And yeah, this will be an interesting game. Simon's right. You know, their strength has very much been in defence, Swansea, so far this season, not giving anything away. Burnley have scored in every game, but not scored two since opening weekend against West Ham during that recovery, which the now departed Fleming rescued a point for them. So difficult to predict the lineup. We don't really know what they're going to look like exactly yet. And that's why, again, I just think a little bit of patience required where Burnley are concerned. And that point at the race course will serve them really well. Amdouni, I think, had 8 attempts on the night, gets a really well-taken goal, and the mood seems to have already lifted to a degree. So I think a difficult game to call, but you would fancy Swansea on their start to the season, maybe by the odd goal.
He strikes me as a very Burnley type of player, Jamie Vardy, though. I think back to the time under Stan Ternan when he brought in Ian Wright, Gazza in their heyday. I think Owen Coyle, when he took them to the Premier League for the first time, your Robbie Blakes, and had a few experienced old heads in there as well, didn't he? So, I don't know, he strikes me as the sort of player, and Sean Dyche as well, Ashley Barnes, people like that. So, I don't know, I think as a bench player, yeah, I wouldn't rule him out. I think, you know, at Championship level, he should be fine for an old goal here and there.
Okay.
I think that's a good point because I feel like they've lost a little bit of that identity and they have obviously yo-yoed a little, but I think of the three Joshes, Brownhill, Cullen and Laurent, for example, they had that spine, I think, of really solid professionals. And I think that's Ashley Barnes, you mentioned there, you go further back. You know, players like Vokes and what have you, guys that were there over a long period, and kind of that's probably the DNA that's just missing a little bit at the moment. So still got Roberts, Connor Roberts, and that'll be him going back to Swansea, won't it? So maybe there's a place for him in the side. And I think that you still need a few leaders within, you know, the sprinkling of talent from different continents, which Burnley have got as well.
All right. Also, in terms of the teams relegated from the Premier League, Wolves in action on Sunday. They go to Bramall Lane to take on Sheffield United, only a point between them ahead of kickoff. It's not going to be 0-0 he said, cursing it. Sheffield United have scored and conceded in 14 of their previous 15 championship games at Bramall Lane, whilst Wolves' three away games in the league this season have all had at least 4 goals. Clarkey was perplexed that Sheffield United managed to win at Blackburn in midweek. You might have seen on social media the clip of Chris Wilder going up to the away fans afterwards and banging his chest, shouting, "Trust me, where are you? Where are you at on the Blades this season so far, Simon?"
I saw them at Blackburn a couple of weeks ago in the Carabao Cup, actually, and was having a chat to a couple of members of staff that I know there after the game. And I think the dressing room took a bit of a shock with this stuff going on kind of behind the scenes and court cases going on with the owners and things like that. And I think the initial concern is like, you know, are we all going to get paid and everything like that, which obviously they have. And I think, yeah, this at the minute, they seem like a team that aren't quite firing, but they're going to get there. You know, Jordan Ayew coming in this week, very Chris Wilder signing, isn't it? You know, we would not get out of a transfer window without Chris Wilder picking up at least one or two experienced freebies around about September and October. And I look at them and, you know, they've got this low knee from Brentford, Ramel Donovan, who scored that late winner last week and looks a really, really, really good young player. Raw, admittedly, but looks like he's got that little bit of spark that they could bring to their team. So, I think Chris Wilder's going to get them up the table as long as politics off the pitch doesn't catch up with them. In terms of this weekend against Wolves, again, probably maybe not a bad time to play Wolves. Cecil Pace shows he's not really got them going yet, has he?
Yeah, sort of in and out a little bit. They no wins in their last couple. They signed Bertrand Traore on Monday, which was one that had passed me by up until we started recording this podcast. I mean, the main thing we've got to talk about with Wolves, Sam, is that Jackson Chatchu's own goal at Birmingham last week, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I was kind of moving between rooms when that game was on and just heard the commentators' decibel levels going up quite a lot, it would have seemed, in that first half, and poked my head around the door and I saw Stansfield smash that one in and then, yeah, a few moments later saw that own goal. And yeah, the numbers are quite interesting reading. They faced the fifth fewest shots, Wolves, and conceded 9 goals. This is just something this morning I was looking at from an XG of just over 6. So I've had a little look back through the highlights of the last few games and there's been quite a few freak goals going in their net. So I don't know if they're that bad defensively than we're all presuming. The West Ham game seemed quite weird. 6 attempts on the target, 4 goals for West Ham. One's a penalty, one's an absolute worldie from Mikasa, one was a deflection. So yeah, I think it may level out in that regard. And if it does, they have got a multitude of brilliant attacking players, as we're being treated to already. So, yeah, they've scored at least 2 in every away game. Only Middlesbrough are creating more chances in terms of the XG model. So, yeah, I think they're going to thrill us. And if they can get it right defensively, then they're going to be a great shout to be in the reckoning for the entirety of the season. But yes, the own goal was very, very funny, Matt, to answer your question. And yeah, I mean, Chris Wilder seems to be in the news a lot at the moment, doesn't he? And there seems to be...
He doesn't mind it, does he?
It seems to be a lot of fires to put out. And I think it is the nature of the beast now. And you guys know more than any, you know, like managers are put up so often to speak to the press pre-match, post-match. He seems to be pretty jovial with the local guys in Sheffield. But yeah, there seems to be a bit of infighting going on there. It's not ideal losing Callum O'Hare really, really late in the day. So it seems like the biggest conversation at the moment is how to fit a lot of experienced guys they've got. You look at the bench the other day, you know, vast experience I think Sheffield United have accumulated in terms of players and signings across the last few seasons. Fitting them into a system. Yes, you have to be flexible, but I think Chris Wilder has spoken about the international break being really important to just try and nail down exactly how he's going to get the best out of this squad.
Okay, let's see if we can do that. Next today, we are going to head to League One. And And we got our first managerial casualty of the season. A duff start to the season for Wickham had consequences for Michael. His P45 will be dropping on his doormat any day now after he failed to earn a win in his first five league games of the season. So Simon, midweek they conceded 3 and 8 minutes at home to MK. They were 2-0 up, went 3-2 down. They did rescue a point. I mean, this isn't just about the start to the season though, is it? They won one of their last six last term. So, and as they said in the statement, actually, from spring, the form's dipped. Is this harsh or is this fair enough?
I mean, I always instantly look at the reaction to some of the club supporters who probably have the best kind of gauge on the situation. It seemed like Wickham fans, a lot of them were quite surprised and shocked and thought it was quite harsh, particularly as they backed the manager. And I know it's not always down to the manager now, the recruitment side of things, but they got a club record signing through the door, Jaden Ware, on the last day of the window. So it does seem like a little bit of a surprise. And from being a club that Gareth Ainsworth had, what, 12 years in charge under the new owners, they've basically had a new permanent manager every 6 months. And they're looking for a new one through the door now. A lot of names linked: Dave Challoner, Eric Ramsey, Carl Robinson, who's in the market, Darren Ferguson. My mind instantly went to Matt Bloomfield. Could he go full circle and go back, given his relationship with the club? I know one or two Wickham supporters weren't particularly happy with the way that he left and went to Luton, etc. But, you know, he got them in quite a good position before he left them for Luton a couple of years ago. So I don't know, maybe he could go back.
What do you think, Sam?
Well, he was on the programme last night, wasn't he? And he didn't completely dismiss it, the Stevenage Luton coverage that is in the studio with Steve Evans. So, these guys want to get back in because it's difficult if you're out of the game for a period. And obviously his last job didn't go particularly well. I suppose there was obviously the change in ownership and there was a lot going on in the background at Wickham during those last days for Matt Bloomfield. So it's probably as much about what those relationships are like, what those relationships were like in him leaving to take another job, more than as to whether he wants to get back in. But yeah, it wouldn't be the daftest idea. I think, yeah, Matt 100% deserves an opportunity at a good club. And, you know, where better than somewhere that he served for 21 years? I mean, that is just incredible. And they should love him despite, you know, obviously it not ending particularly well last time. I think this is really harsh, to be honest, this sacking. And I know last season in terms of results was really poor, but they've had a tough start against some fancied teams just side Jaden Wareham. I like some of the recruitment, especially in the forward positions. I think they're going to score a lot of goals, Wickham, and I think this is probably a product of a bit of a gear shift within the hierarchy of the club in terms of the new ownership and in terms of the money that they're spending and the different resources available. There's probably that thirst to go and get close to the championship or get in the championship again, which Gareth Ainsworth pulled up trees to achieve a few years ago. But that's not the reality. There's a lot of good teams in League One, a lot of well-run football clubs. And I think, yeah, Michael Duff will get another gig. And yeah, my sentiment is they probably just acted a little bit too soon.
Okay, and we'll see who gets that job in the next couple of weeks or days. I would have thought Tom Hounsell is in interim charge for Saturday's trip to Leighton Orient. Now that we've got you, Simon, as I mentioned, Oxford is your area of expertise. Let's have a word on the U's now. They've taken to life back in League One under new management. I mean, that thumping win at Leicester, obviously the standout last week. Only one defeat in four in the league. You've only had one home game so far, so that feels like a decent start. What's Ramsey Ball like?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially given the fact they were put under embargo within a couple of weeks of Aaron Ramsey getting the job, which I don't think he expected, certainly no supporter expected. It's been a challenging start in terms of having to manage the club off the pitch, because no UEFA pro licence prepares you for that situation, or for players who don't want to train and don't want to play, which was the case with a couple that have got the moves that they wanted now. But what he's managed to do is knit together a squad who I think is 100% very much together. And you could see that against Leicester at the weekend. And, you know, he's shown his tactical nous when you think, you know, Aaron Ramsey and what his fourth game as a manager against Russell Martin in his 200 and something, probably more games as a manager, totally figured out how Leicester were going to play and totally outfoxed them. And the 4-0 scoreline was not flattering at all. They could have won by more. So it's definitely been a great start, but it is just a start. And with that transfer embargo, I think realistically, Oxford have got to be very lucky getting into January without any major injuries. You know, he's with a couple of players out injured. He's had the opportunity to blood a few youngsters, and there's a young lad called Mo Mosinga. He set up the first goal and scored the second goal, who in a long, long time, I haven't seen a player come into certainly the Oxford team and look so at home, so composed and so comfortable. I think he's a real prospect. We've had a lot of good young players come through, but no one who's kind of fitted in like that. And suddenly, randomly, he replaced Idomo Amako, who cost quite a lot of money from Millwall in the January window because he's injured. But he's probably looked better than him, and he's looked better than Stan Mills, who they sold to Preston. Obviously, that's in a bite-sized chunk of a game and a half. But, you know, for an 18-year-old coming into the team, the circumstances that he's found himself in, Aaron Ramsey's putting these young players in, showing faith in them, probably maybe looking at what Cardiff's old club did last year to get themselves out of League One and trying to model it on that. It's very, very early on, obviously, and you know, my son's mascot for the game against Burton tomorrow because it's his birthday today, so the script as an Oxford supporter says we're going to go and lose that game 1-0, but I think that you've got to be impressed with the way Aaron Ramsey's, you know, taking this on in his first job so far.
All right, well, good luck to Watts Jr. on Saturday. I'm sure he'll have a great time, even if the result doesn't go your way, which, hey, it may well do. We mentioned Leicester there and their home hammering last weekend. They go to Edgeley Park to face Stockport this weekend, which feels massive for Russell Martin. Lots of derision early in his tenure as Fox in chief. Simon, you followed him a lot during his managerial career. I mean, it's easy to have a go at the fella at the moment, isn't it? And a lot of Leicester fans are doing so. Can you give them any reason to think that he might be able to turn this round?
It's a tough defence. Did you play with him, Sam, when he was at Wickham as a player, by the way? Was that
No,
your...
I didn't, no. No.
No, I mean, what I find perplexing about Russell Martin, and I know I'm going to give a defence of him in a moment, but is that, you know, this isn't a manager that's come in from another country or has coached and played at the top flight. You know, if Aaron Ramsey was kind of trying to commit to the way he's trying to get his teams to play, you would maybe understand it a little more. But this is someone who's been around the lower leagues, who's, you know, as a player, played in teams that have had to have pragmatic approaches before. And this kind of insistence on sticking to a certain style of player that teams have totally and utterly figured out is bizarre, to say the least. And this is probably the worst possible game for Leicester. Stockport were in the National League North when Leicester won the Premier League a decade ago. That's how far the two sides have come. And this is the team with the second highest average possession in League One, that's Stockport, against the team with the highest possession in League One in Leicester. The difference being Stockport are the joint highest scorers with 13 goals and Leicester have only scored 3. So that shows what possession with a purpose versus possession for possession's sake brings you. But my defence of Russell Martin is that, given a little bit of time in the job, he's a manager who's known to develop players. He's given a few youngsters their chance at Leicester City in the last couple of matches. It hasn't yielded the results just yet. But I think we could all probably look at Leicester and go, okay, I think the problem here isn't necessarily the manager. It's probably something a little bit deeper rooted than that. And I think that if you get rid of the manager now, if you get rid of Russell Martin now, and I'll be honest with you, I can't see him surviving. And actually, I think you speak to Leicester fans and Martin O'Neill, Nigel Pearson, Claudio Ranieri, there's a certain type of manager that just fits the Leicester DNA. And I just don't think Russell Martin is that. But I think as a manager, the reason he attracts himself to jobs is because he is a developer of players and he has got quite a clear philosophy. I just don't think he's going to be given the time really to see that through with Leicester.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Well, he could do with a win at the weekend, that's for sure. Two teams in League Two could do with a win. Port Vale and Exeter, relegated from League One last term. Both had tough starts back to life in League Two. Vale yet to win, only 2 points and 2 goals. Exeter beat Spurs in the week, but only one league victory so far. Briefly, Sam, because we're tight for time, why are these two finding it so difficult on their return to the fourth tier?
Good question. And I mean, Port Vale were really fancied, weren't they, if we rewind about a month. I don't think I was in that camp. You can replay me the tape if I was, but I didn't really get that, to be honest. John Brady had that real success at Northampton, but I think the jury's certainly out on him currently and at the back end of last season with a lot of indifferent performances. Some really interesting signings. You know, you look at the 11, there's a lot of experienced guys there that have had periods where they showed real promise in their careers. So I would say for them, it's probably finding a consistent 11, a little bit of patience required. I think a little bit different for Matt Taylor because the budget, I would imagine, is a lot smaller. They have obviously moved on moved on. They've lost Jaden Wareham, brought in Rose, who I've always really liked. And the support cast is not bad. Gwion Edwards is one of those kind of more experienced boys that Exeter have got to do to help the young players that they bring through and the nucleus of the 11, which is very, very youthful. Josh Gordon, another one who's had a good lower league career, who will contribute goals and assists. And I really like Reese Cole. I think he's a terrific footballer, actually. Really graceful, capable of the spectacular. So I think they will supply a front man, but it's whether someone's going to kind of take the mantle of what Wareham's produced for them over quite a long period. So I would be more confident about Exeter improving as the season goes. And that's probably partly due to Matt Taylor and partly due to the type of club Exeter is and where I think generally they will trust in what he's doing and what he's done previously. I think John Brady needs results quickly. Six goals between them. You've picked out a thriller here, Matt. And yeah, I think if Exeter go there and win, there could be quite a lot of noise coming out of Vale Park, not positive stuff at full time.
I know we're really tight for time, but I just want to give a very, very quick shout out to one of my in-laws, Kev, who's a big Exeter fan, so big that he travels from Upminster in Essex to go and watch them. And I asked him for a little bit of intel before this. And he says that if you give him a bit of time under Matt Taylor, he does think they'll be mid-table and really look to push on with that money they got from Ollie Watkins going over to Saudi Arabia, which they didn't really have time to spend before the window shut, but they could change things around in January.
Yeah, up to £2 million they might get.
Some deal that, isn't it? Whoever struck that.
No such luck for the winner of our predictions game. Last week, Sam got 3 points. Adrian got one. I didn't get any. Simon, you're subbing in for Clarkie this week.
So I predicted the outcome of three games, basically.
You did, yeah.
That's all you're going to give me there.
Yeah, we've had this conversation many times in the past. You don't get bonus points for it. I pitched
I just like a well done for telling
well
you
done.
Exactly what was going to happen in three random EFL matches.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, let's see if you can repeat the trick this week. I'll tell you what you get. You get to go first on this one. Watford against Stoke. What's going to happen?
Let's all get on the old Stoke train, eh? I was speaking to a Stoke fan the other day. Very, very positive. And given what he's done, he's set me up, hasn't he? 2-1 away win. No problem.
Okay. Simon, what do you reckon?
I'm playing with house money here, seeing as I'm doing this on Clarkie's behalf, so I feel like I'm going to go a bit maverick. I had 2-1 Stoke written down for the same reasons, but I can't go the same as Parky. So I'm going to go 2-2 because both teams...
Yeah,
well,
don't mind it.
Yeah, there you go. That's my prediction.
I'll go 0-1 Stoke. Why not? Chef Wed Wigan. Simon, you can have first go at this one.
3-0 Sheffield Wednesday. Wigan look poor Wednesday, certainly at home, look the real deal this year.
I think this might be a clean sweep for home wins. What do you reckon, Sam?
I think so, yeah. We covered them a couple of weeks ago when they scored like three worldies, didn't they, against MK, if memory serves. But either side, smashed last weekend, lost poorly at Wimbledon on that Sunday. Yeah, I'll go for him to give up slightly more of a fight. 2-0.
Okay, I will say 4-1. Why not? But I have written that in the wrong part of the doc. This is interesting, isn't it, listener? I accidentally put 3-0 by me and not Simon. But I can rectify that, don't worry. Shrewsbury against Northampton. I guess this is me going first, is it? I will say this is going to be a 0-0 draw. What do you reckon, Sam?
I don't think you're far away, mate. And I don't think there's going to be much goalmouth action. I will go 1-0 Shrews.
Okay. Simon?
As I changed my last one for matching Sam's score, I'm going to have to do the same again. Cobblers got their first win against Newport last week, but I think this is going to be a dire game, so I'm going to sit on the fence but go 1-1.
Okay, not bad. All right, I was going to do a Reading admin tweet of the week about George Earthy's first goal on home soil because I like the pun, but I think actually we're going to pause this feature because I've noticed that there is very, very slim pickings from EFL players at the moment, so maybe we don't do it this week, then that will liven somebody up to come up with something benign for next week. Before we go, though, let me remind you one more time of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25 if your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting. Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+, and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. And that is where we're going to leave things for this week. Back with you same time next week. Clark will be back with us then. Simon, thank you very much for your contributions today. We'll catch up with you soon, I'm sure.
Pleasure.
And Sam, yeah, you'll be back on duty next week as well. Enjoy the weekend's action if you're going to a game. We'll catch up with you soon. For now, it's goodbye.